So I've been asked to share a few thoughts, particularly for those of you who are first-time visitors here, perhaps to South Africa. I want to contextualize SA, some thoughts, perhaps my very personal thoughts, of our own country, and particularly what is happening in our continent, largely focusing on Sub-Sahara Africa, if I may. Now, we are sitting here in Johannesburg, in my country. I'm a frequent visitor to, as Rod mentioned, to Asia, and particularly to China, and I see some people here from China today. And, you know, I often accompany South African groups to that part of the world. We go to Shanghai, we go to Beijing, and often the group who goes over believes that Shanghai somehow is representative of China of 1.34 billion people. In the same way, people who come to Johannesburg for the first time believe somehow that this is representative of Africa. It's clearly not. Sandton is largely nothing like the rest of the continent of 1 billion people. So traveling around the continent for 6 weeks would be certainly a phenomenal opportunity. And you'll learn far more than most people do, I think, living in this town, which I might call a bit of an island. Sandton's almost sort of an island in the broader continental scheme of things. But I've always called it a first world economy and a third world wrapper. And this is where we are as a country right now. Now, something to put up here, and this is what I've yet to figure out, is there's no country in the world where there is such a distinction between the competitiveness of private sector and the competitiveness or lack thereof of the public sector than South Africa. The only other country I can think of where there's this extreme paradox almost is maybe India, maybe, but quite different, of course. Now, I've taken the most recent 2012 World Economic Forum competitiveness indicators, and this is what I've come up with. World class, that's us. That is where you are right now in Sandton. There's no other country I can think of that has generated the number of successful international, multinational companies from an economy this size than South Africa and perhaps South Korea. Economy of a country of 50 million people. We have an absolutely world-class, world-leading private sector. And those are the green indicators. On top of the list, of course, is the Johannesburg Stock Exchange. I'm not just saying that Nikki, because you're here, and Chris, but really, hats off. We run the world's best run stock exchange. And I often say to our friends, with all due respect to New York and London and Singapore, Hong Kong, we're better than you, according to the World Economic Forum, and we're African. And I think that is a key point. The second thing is on the public sector, sort of, shall I say, health and prime education, higher education and training, labour market efficiency. Not sure what that is. Excuse me, Cisco. There we go. And technological readiness. And just some arbitrary sort of indicators to show this extreme contrast in our country. Extreme. Extreme competitiveness and almost the laggard indicators from a public sector perspective. Now, in 3 weeks' time or so, we will be hosting the BRICS Summit. Put this slide in. And looking at some comparative indicators between ourselves and our BRIC colleagues. BRICS has taken South Africa, at least the parastatals, the government sector, extreme enthusiasm since we've joined the grouping in December 2010, when we were invited by our friends in Beijing to become part of BRICS. The challenge now and how we're thinking from South Africa, and many of you, particularly from Kenya perhaps, are often suspicious of our motives of South Africa, but is, from BRICS perspective, is President Jacob Zuma has been very intent on trying to have this not so much as a S equals South Africa, but at the very least, S stands for SADC, a regional market of over a quarter of a billion people, 15 countries. We're bigger than Brazil, we're bigger than Russia, we're bigger than other aspirant members such as Indonesia, Turkey, Mexico, Vietnam, perhaps. But this is where we were last year. Now, in the words of the Queen, Queen Elizabeth, a decade or so ago, 2012 was a annus horribilis for South Africa, a horrible year. And it came down to this is what the strike activity, the massacre at Marikana in mid-year, the currency issue, the ANC conference issue, again, rising sense of political risk in the country. But the biggest challenge as we as a country face, the biggest challenge I would argue, is this disconnect between government and business. It significantly hampers our ability. It's a partly a legacy issue, it's partly a political issue. But ultimately, when you hear the strong sentiment, I was listening to a radio this morning driving to here, from the likes of Pravin Gordhan, our world-class finance minister, and talking about the need to for us to sort of embrace this one nation, single country sort of approach. I think a lot of work needs to be done around narrowing this disconnect that we have. Again, I don't know any other country where there is such tension and friction between private sector, business, and government as South Africa, and this ultimately is our problem. One of our greatest assets is the financial services sector, which all of you are very familiar with here in SA. And as I mentioned earlier, is the we're looking at the WEF, the Forum's indicators of competitiveness. The financial services sector certainly provides a phenomenal platform for the region, the SA region. This is what worries me. I'm flying through this. I'm sorry, time's a bit tight. But this was a Standard Bank slide I found last year, and it indicates a GDP contribution. 1990, South Africa represented of sub-Saharan Africa, nudging 50%, half of sub-Saharan African GDP. Yeah, that was pretty strong. Today, we're down to 22%. Now, clearly Nigeria and Angola, oil is distorting. But for me, what the key point is here, we grew as an economy last year at 2.5%. If you're growing at Chinese rates of average 9.9 for three decades, or even Nigeria now perhaps 7.5%, effectively at those high stellar growth rates, you're doubling the size of your economy every 7-8 years. 2.5%, clearly we are a laggard in our own region. And this is what I have difficulty comprehending. We're this first world economy in a third world developing rapidly. Clearly the first world economy here in Sandton is booming. We're doing very well. We will do very well. But the peripheral economy, if I can call it that, the second track economy is being called, clearly is misfiring. And that is resulting ultimately in this relative decline of regional GDP that South Africa currently finds itself in. So, on the branding side, I put this in The Economist magazine, which we all read. Richard Dowdett, who was a good friend of mine, he runs the Royal Africa Society in London, many of you will know him, I'm sure. He was Africa editor for The Economist in 2000, when this hopeless continent cover story came out. And he threatened to resign when it did come out, but he didn't. But nevertheless, it created an enormous amount of discussion, not just in St. James's Street in London, where The Economist is based, but also in this country. And it was the height of the African Renaissance, the whole launch of the NetNed, the new partnership for African development. And it took a whole decade or so before the new brand of the continent, which many of you are hearing now, this Africa Rising, has sort of come to the fore. Growth in Africa, sub-Sahara, excluding SA, this year, is forecast by the African Development Bank to be 6.6%. If we strip or include South Africa, because of the weighting, it drops to 5.4. But regardless, still extremely robust growth. And what is often said these days, the second fastest growing economy, a regional economy in the world, second only to the China-driven Asia. Now, this is the McKinsey sort of numbers. Now, this is arguably, this report was released in May, June 2010. just before the FIFA 2010 World Cup here in SA. And arguably, the greatest legacy of the World Cup was not the stadia or Spain winning or whatever, but it was largely, I would argue, this simple report by a global consulting company which really, really started to influence and redirect the brand of Africa. Now, when looking through the eyes of McKinsey, which is the eyes of a salesman, effectively, is the numbers are fantastic. However, and there's always an however, particularly for me, is that what must differentiate between growth and development? Growth does not equate to development. And ultimately for me is looking at which countries. The question is Africa the next Asia? Will we see the Vietnams of Africa emerge, manufacturing, low-cost manufacturing sort of economies? Will we see the sort of South Koreas emerge? Will we see the Malaysias perhaps, the Taiwans, the Hong Kongs perhaps? China's clearly different. But I think that's the more accurate question as to discuss as to how Africa is going to start to move beyond just the growth into more embedded development in our economies. So, this is the Newsweek magazine. This is taken literally a few hundred meters from here. That's Citibank on the corner, and that's Nelson Mandela sort of square on the left, the holiday on the right. But Africa's the new India. I don't know if anyone from India here, but you know, when I see it, I'm talking about a place. Just bear me out for a second. I'm talking about a place. There's 1 billion people. There's strong corporate profits, rising middle class, strong consumer demand, incredibly bureaucratic, very politically, economically fragmented, terrible infrastructure, pretty corrupt a lot of the time. Am I talking about Africa? Am I talking about India? Same thing. Africa is not the new China. We know that. That's different. It's game over. But is Africa the new India? Arguably, perhaps, yes. Now, understanding Africa, and I'll be brief here, is what is the African economy? Now, often if you go back to my first slide, it shows a map of Africa. We always see that. And it sort of reinforces this image that Africa is somehow united and it's one place, and it's totally not true, of course, but homogeneous. This, for me, is a real African economy. Now, I've broken it down in sort of the graphic to make it a little bit more sort of obvious. This is Africa Light for South Africa. We all speak English here, mostly. Common legal system, most of the time, Namibia is slightly different. But that is Zambia, Malawi, Zimbabwe, Botswana, Namibia, Swaziland, Lesotho, and SA. This is where South African companies are incredibly comfortable. And that is the sort of very southern part of the continent. Secondly, we have this part, which is Lusapo, Portuguese-speaking. Angola and Mozambique. Now this gets a little bit confusing for us. Angola was a country that for 10 years during the presidency of President Thabo Mbeki, not one cabinet minister came from Angola to South Africa, and not one South African minister went to Angola. This at the time was one of the world's fastest growing economies, and it's what a 2.5-3 hour flight away here from here to Luanda. We neglected Angola. I often joke, and this is a very non-PC comment, but I joked to my friends in Beijing recently. I said, you know, how many provinces does China have? I think the guy said, like, 30 or something. I said, no, there's 31. He said, no, there's 30. I said, no, there's 31. You forgot about Angola. And because the joke is, so the question for us is, who lost Angola from South Africa? Because we certainly did. Mozambique as well, a place where Brazilian companies, Chinese firms are incredibly proactive. But SA firms, particularly Angola, have very little traction indeed. Even China runs its investment strategy largely into Mozambique and Angola through Macau, a former colony of Portugal, leveraging the linguistic or the cultural comparative advantage that former colonies seemingly have. East Africa, probably arguably the most integrated region, the EAC, East African Community, well-run, Secretary General from Rwanda, very progressive guy, and again, a strong regional market in the EAC, has made far better strides around media integration than we have down in SADC, or ECOWAS has, for example, in West Africa. Francophone Africa, French-speaking. This is where it gets a little bit more confusing for us. Arguably, beyond maybe Gabon and Senegal now, and including Mauritius, beyond those countries, there's hardly one of these third countries, arguably, that is an economically, politically viable state. Francophone Africa, and we know what's happening now in Central African Republic, and Mali, Niger, most parts of the continent, is a political mess. It really is. 450-odd million Africans speak French, but I'm afraid, having the French colonial legacy as a political foundation of the economy is certainly not an asset. West Africa. Nigeria is a big one, of course, and Ghana to the West Africa light for South African companies. But Nigeria, I believe I read, stock exchange in US dollar terms up 63% in 2012. That's phenomenal. Kenya, I believe, stellar, was it 46? I read. It really is impressive. Stellar numbers, really. Maghreb, North Africa, and then ultimately Ethiopia, a country I'm very, very positive towards, and Somalia, the ultimate failed state. But looking, this is the continent. This is the real fragmented African economies which we need to look at the map afresh. It's certainly anything but homogeneous. So, to conclude, I'll fly with this. This is the last, we often cite this, it's very positive news, admittedly from low basis, but according to the Economist magazine, we had the last six economies in the last decade, top growers, and this current sort of 5 years stint, seven of the top 10 are African. This is very, very positive. Of course, it's because from low basis, but nevertheless, should be applauded. What is driving this? These are sort of factors for me which are underpinning this stronger growth, robust growth by any measure in the region currently. So, I'm going to fly through all of this, apologies, and I want to conclude with this. Okay. For me, the most important thing is on the GDP, is GDP does not matter. It doesn't tell anywhere near the full story. The country of the highest GDP per capita on the continent is Equatorial Guinea. For those who beat Equatorial Guinea know that it's something of a developmental disaster. But again, oil distorts practically, oil distorts the picture in the continent. But for me, the risks going forward as follows is a lot of the growth in the continent has been underpinned, or forecasted growth, has been underpinned by oil and gas. 40 of 54 African states, 40, have either discovered or are exploiting oil and gas deposits. Now, in the next 5 years, and I'm probably being conservative, possibly three or four, the US, the world's biggest economy, will not be importing any oil from Africa. There's currently, as I understand it, an energy revolution taking place around shale gas fracking in the US. Really driving a new energy competitiveness drive in the US economy. Strategically, the United States will disconnect from or retreat from Africa. You strip out the oil interests, what other interests really are there beyond war and terror? This could significantly impact the growth forecasts of our continent. It creates strategically a far wider open door for new actors such as China, India, amongst others, to engage into the oil and gas sectors into Africa. But nevertheless, I think the energy revolution in the US right now will have knock-on negative effects for growth in Africa going forward. The second risk for me ultimately is political. There was a slide earlier. Africa is not poor, it's just very poorly managed, has been. And you see in Francophone Africa now is the brittleness of the politics and how that impacts on the economics and forecasts of the country. The third risk is that of the inability of leaderships on the continent to look beyond resources, and particularly referring here to oil and gas. If you go to Mozambique, Uganda, Nigeria these days, Ghana even, you know, there's almost an obsession to oil and gas. Now, there's only a handful of countries. This is Africa the next Asia? That will only take place when leaderships start to understand that resources, practically, from a developmental point of view, unless you know what you're doing long term, have no value. This is the Asia story. The best measure of this is so-called MVA, manufacturing value add in the economy. In the last decade, there are only four or five countries on the continent whose MVA contribution has actually grown beyond a 4% compound annual growth rate. This is according to a recent UNIDA report. The countries are Angola, Mozambique, Lesotho, Uganda, surprisingly, Namibia. Those are the five. The rest are in reverse gear when it comes to manufacturing value add, i.e. value add in one's economy. It concerns me greatly that many of our countries in the region see their future tied to resources, as if we're the next Kuwait, the next Saudi, the next Emirates, perhaps. But that is wrong. If the Asian model, if you will, or developmental experience is to be emulated, it's about how MBA is added into one's own economy. And this is the story of that. Obviously, you can see the Asia story and the relative small poor performance of Africa amongst other regions, admittedly, in recent years. So, to conclude, I like this picture. This is not Africa underwater, but this is a bit we see. You'll see in the next 6 weeks and going back to your pending travels. It's an unbelievably complex place, the continent. 54 countries, very, very heterogeneous. For me, it was George Bush, and I hope no one's a supporter, George Bush Jr., who once said that Nigeria, that's a great continent. And that, unfortunately, often the perception of Africa. We need to break it down, look at country cases, sector cases, because ultimately, we're not exploiting the opportunity that Africa presents. One last point, if I make in 30 seconds, is what I see happening. The greatest opportunity, there's the country story, there's the sector story, and there's the company story. What I'm seeing now on the continent, and someone said recently, I think it was the CEO of Massmart, yeah, there'll never be a region, there'll be no more 1 billion markets left after Africa. And it's true. I read in Business Day last week, a leading business publication here in SA, ShopRite has 144 stores, ShopRite Checkers, 144 stores north of South Africa. It has 1,000 stores in South Africa. 144 stores as a portion of its market capitalization are worth more north than 1,000 stores in South Africa. Value is being derived from growth and potential. We're seeing the first move advantage, MTN story, mobile telecoms. First move advantage, consolidation. The retail story, ShopRite Checkers, 144 stores. Pick and pay, 96. Consolidation of retail, organized retail. We see the banking story, the Standard Bank, the ABSAs, again, increasing confidence, formalizing the sectors, retail banking in Africa. We will see other sectors, commercial property, companies like Atterbury, probably the major, arguably the only real commercial property company developer into Africa. This is where the true value is. is to find the companies most enlisted here in the JSC which are becoming intra-African multinationals, first mover advantage, consolidating their sectors. That's where the opportunity really lies, I would argue, from a business equity perspective, in this very complex place we call Africa. Just some brief thoughts. Thank you very much.